Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Gods Will Not Save You, The Wire Revisited. I'm Willie.
Hey, my name is Jakob. Welcome back. And this is a podcast where the co-hosts do a deep read of each episode of The Wire. And we're getting to almost the final stretch. No, not really. But yeah, this is a transition. So yeah. Episode 4
of season 5. That's right. So yeah, let's kick things off the way Caliccio really kicked off his own demise, as we can say, with him falling for Kennard's trap and trying to indict a corner that like Michael and a bunch of people are sitting on. But he accidentally ends up putting his hand on dog excrement.
Yep. Old time trick. No, I've never heard of that. Kennard, very resourceful in his murderous and pranking. In his murderous ways and, yeah, being a prankster.
Yeah.
So I guess dog poo prank is the true gateway to murder.
To murdering, like, the most beloved character
yeah.
in television history. I know I sound like a broken record with this stuff, but in the commentary...
Oh, this is a commentary episode?
You know, we had previously talked about how
you'll kill yourself if you don't watch every episode.
We touched on that, but also like how Ed Burns, like, in a lot of ways took a step back from this season, but apparently he wrote the teleplay for this episode, but you know, he was in Africa a lot of the time working on Generation Kill, and he talked about how this was going to be Benjamin Bush's either like second to last or final appearance on the show since he had just got cast on Generation Kill, so they couldn't use him anymore. So they wanted to make sure he went out with a bang in a really, you know, dramatic scene that shows his range and his rage. So
there you go.
Pretty effective capper there, I gotta say. He smears shit all over Kennard and then attacks a teacher.
Jesus. I don't there you go.
I mean, what more can you say? What more can you say about it?
I mean, you have a knack of just getting right to it. So I appreciate that.
I mean, he's been an asshole like all this time. Like, he's introduced in season 3 and has always been a pretty unsympathetic character, and this is just kind of like the pinnacle of his assholishness. And it's only right that Carver would reprimand him for that, write him up for abusive conduct or whatever.
Right. Yeah, he's getting held back by Bobby Brown, who's there. And he's like, we're the police. Wait, I'm a police? Wait, I had to do a little of my own research because I get so confused still.
About Bobby.
Did we talk about how he was a real... I mean, no, it wasn't, right? I misunderstood. No.
Yeah, because Clark Johnson and Bill Zorzi did say he was a real cop, but we haven't been able to find anything.
I looked back and I mean, there is some funny shit, though. Like, I guess he was like a real boxer, though.
Yeah, he was a boxer.
Yeah, so like, so he went easy on that one cop in the last in the episode.
Yeah, and, let me show you what not to do in the ring.
Yeah, and he's from DC, so like it kind of makes sense. He's like the evolved version of Pelicanos, like. Yeah, but like, you know, Carver was trying to do the standard cop stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey man, keep it in house.
Yeah,
but he really, it's not like he just changed his tune. Like, he didn't just change up because because Caliccio's like being such a jerk then. I mean, right?
Yeah,
like, it's been building for a while, like you said.
Yeah,
but it didn't help that he like totally was like, no, us versus them.
Yeah,
and then he gets like basically like threatened right there too. Like,
yeah,
they're gonna call you a rat, da, 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 da. I'm like, and then there was like a real life situation like this where this cop, I forget his name, it was like Crystal or something. basically this guy, it's like, I don't know, Baltimore, God, we got to go someday. A guy like was on the run and he broke through a door, like a random house, but it turned out to be like a side chick or girlfriend of like the cop that was chased, like who was involved. So then he took him, like he took the suspect out back and like beat him up for breaking into his like girlfriend's house. Yeah. Just randomly. Damn. I'm like, how, what, like what? And then he like broke his ankle while he was like, something, like he got hurt, you know, he got beaten. And then a cop there was like, this is wrong. So he tried to speak out on it and then became like a pariah. Like basically this happened to him and he got basically ran out of Baltimore for speaking out on this situation.
Jesus.
You know, not going to get into like which race, you know, each party was, but Simon would be somewhere like, I told you all.
It's about class. It's about class.
Look at the cop. Look at the ethnicity of the cop who beat this guy up.
Oh, my goodness.
No, sorry.
No, that's, you know, he's always towing the line, as you said.
toes.
Yeah, this is like, can this little interaction and like whole storyline fit into the umbrella of this being an episode about transitions? Because they're constantly talking about like how like the new school is more rambunctious and unruly than the old school. Like Caliccio like went crazy, like arguably crazier than Prez did when Daniels reprimanded him in the first season. And like, you know, there's no accountability because everybody, it's just like a really toxically masculine culture where everybody will like rag on you for going against your own. But Carver is our, like, I feel like that, that little insult about being a rat hurled at Carver hit pretty close to home for him because he probably feels in his mind that he was a rat at some point when he ratted out Daniels in the first season to the higher up. So I feel like this is where he's coming to grips with the idea that sometimes it is okay to snitch.
Yeah. I hope you come around someday, man. Because I know you're like anti-snitching for sure.
No, in certain instances, but not this. This is great.
All right, yeah. good stuff.
You want to move on to what's going on with Clay Davis's shady financial dealings and how Lester and Sidner hope to catch him up on his sloppy paperwork and whatnot.
Yeah, they're zeroing in on his like little nonprofit.
Yeah.
Always good stuff. I advise everyone to, you know, try to get involved with nonprofits if you can. Start an LLC on LegalZoom. Like, is my phone's spying on me because I'm seeing ads about like starting your own LLC and stuff. I'm like, wait, I was using headphones while listening, like watching this latest episode, right? Like talking about all this shady stuff and
yeah.
No, I'm, I don't know. Hey, trying, man, to riff on stuff.
It'll be a good money laundering for you.
Exactly.
You'll be prosperous.
Very prosperous. Like, so Clay's so, like, he's so breaded or whatever you want to call it, but yeah, he still has to take a gift from his mother-in-law for a down payment.
Yeah, well, that must have been like
another way.
I mean, it must have been so long ago that maybe this was just him,
yeah,
like beginning on the journey of his griftiness.
Ah, grifty is the way. No.
But it's kind of like, there's so many other things he could easily be caught up for. Like, he's been a shady character for the entirety of the series' run. But I thought it was interesting that Ed Burns was like, oh, like technically what they're trying to do or like trying to incriminate him for, I wouldn't want to like pursue ethically in the first place, because it's kind of a way of like being oppressive class-wise, because I was having like a little trouble like following the through line of what exactly they were trying to nail him for. So apparently it's that he was borrowing money from his mother-in-law, but then when he was filling out the application for the mortgage, he claimed the money that he was getting from his mother-in-law as his own. So that counts as like falsification on the loan application. So that's like, I mean, that's like, so it's like kind of ironic that they're getting him for something that seems so minor when he's such a like, you know, monumentally corrupt figure.
Yeah. It's like they're herking him or something, you know, because he's like running around out of control. And then it's just like, oh, some technicality from like the field manual.
Yeah.
But
it's a paperwork street rip.
There you go.
It's a paper rip.
All right. Yeah. So. But this is like the same thing that they got Ed Norris on, I heard. I just remembered. And it was hard for me to understand too. But now it kind of all makes sense where he basically, thanks for highlighting that for your own use. I guess I'm hard to follow.
No, that's okay.
Yeah. So he just apparently got a $9,000. You know, gift from his dad or for a mortgage down payment. But then same thing happened where basically, you know, he paid the money back. So then they claim that he lied on the loan. And he's like, man, that's really what they get. Like, I see where Ed's coming from. Ed Burns.
Yeah.
And not that I want it like them for to not try to go after Ed Norris for that, like, yeah. You know, other people maybe not, but you know, I'm always biased, like no class whatever relief for him. He's shady all the way. Yeah. He's like, that's what they got me for. I mean, come on, I was doing all this other stuff. I was embezzling funds from like the police coffers or whatever.
Yeah.
Ed Norris single-handedly defunded BPD more than like any mayor ever could. Although it wasn't like tax dollars, but
yeah,
corrupt guy. So anyways, hey, you know, like what do you think? Do you think this ever came up, or like did Ed Burns ever mention it in the commentary? Like, or is it just so prevalent, this type of thing, that it wasn't like gonna ever be perceived to be a shot against like Ed Norris?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of, I don't know, man. I just feel like it's kind of like the irony of it that it's that small of a detail that they feel like could be the straw that breaks the camel's back with the whole Clay Davis thing. But like, you know, like we've mentioned before, your little opinions about Ed Norris is like one of the rare disagreements you have with the creative team here.
Yeah.
Everybody going to bat for him.
They like him, man. Yeah, it is weird, but you know, we've each come up with our own, like, you know, there's a few. I have a litany of disagreements. But like, what's up with the disparity? Like, so they were going to get him, Clay Davis, for 30 years or something like that.
If they take it federal.
Oh, okay.
Or, wait, no.
I don't know, but it seemed like a lot more. The point is like, regardless, I mean, Ed Norris got 6 months, so I'm like, what is the, you know, did the law change? But anyways.
Well, I think, yeah, I don't know.
Does it? It's like we're...
Because I was going to say, like, Clay Davis probably just has, like, a whole string of scams behind him. But as you mentioned before, Ed Norris, I mean...
Probably not as many as Clay Davis, but you never know. Like, you never know.
Clay Davis is, like, openly fraternizing with
drug
lords.
Yeah, this is definitely, I never thought that like we could nail down some like concrete stuff into like Clay Davis's composition. Like I always just figured it's corrupt politician A.
Larry.
Yeah. This guy, Larry Elder. No.
Never even made it that far.
Yeah. But what is up with the, like, you know, how we didn't really ever get into like the, you know, oh, this is like crazy now, like the zeitgeist back then, you know, like other podcasts get into the what aged, you know, well and right. poorly. And but I mean, the whole like comment from Perlman, she's made a few before about like you called her out on like college affordability or something like that, or like yeah. loans. And this is like similar. It's like, well, every like co-ed or, you know, like a couple years after college, they get their starter home. Like everyone's doing this with their loan from their parents or whatever. I'm like, a couple years after college, people buying houses.
Like, I know.
Yeah. It's like, different times.
And they even like mentioned this, like, it was like, this is one thing that hasn't aged well, because this, episode came out before the crazy financial collapse in 2008. So it's also kind of like, you know, when Fat Face Rick is talking about like gentrifying neighborhoods and clearing a mill and stuff, it's like, oh, this is not as easily attainable as it was like 6 months ago or whatever when this episode came out earlier in 2008.
Yeah. Well, maybe my comment then is dumb. Like, that didn't age well, what I just said, because, yeah, like, who needs money from your parents or whatever to start, you know, get your starter home if you could just qualify for a subprime mortgage. Should have thought about that.
No, that's good. We're unpacking this together.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks. All right. How about those transitions?
Do you think Rupert Bond is kind of shady or short-sighted in this instance with him just negating the idea that they should take it federal because he thinks it could be a career case for himself?
Maybe he's thinking about class too. No. explain this a little bit more because I'm a little confused. Like, you know, he's not sitting like, yeah, he is. That's kind of my instinct. I was like, oh, he wants to like hold off or something for the home run or something.
Yeah, because I was a little confused about this whole situation as well, because in my mind I was thinking like, wait, did he know what happened with the U.S. attorney and how they were like withholding the information about Marlo? But how would that connect? But I think it becomes clear when Clay leaves the courthouse and the media is already there, and Freeman like mentioned something about how Bond sicked the media on Clay Davis because he wanted to get out ahead of it early and show that, like, you know, his legal capability is going to bring this corrupt guy down. But yeah, just like typical wire web of deceit where nobody is completely clean and everybody's angling for their own like power grab.
Crisis in blue.
Exactly. Yeah.
Me being joke. Oh wait. Me being joke. That's me making a dumb joke about David Simon's articles.
Yeah. Series of articles, right?
Yeah.
So Daniels is trying to combat the fake news media by
this is great.
Yeah, he took Marla's advice and is trying to get out ahead of like the whole or a potential whole like controversy between him and Burrell and say, you know, I never said anything bad about you. It's all good. Don't hit me in the back of that head with that big golf club you have there.
Yeah. Yeah, Burrell's back to golfing.
Yeah.
Yeah. nothing good happens when he's doing that. I don't know. But
can Burrell really be that upset with that golden parachute he's getting worked by so eloquently by Nerisse Campbell?
I mean, she's hooking it up. I'm like, you know, Bunny, look where he's languishing at his like whatever, barely could get 30 grand and Burrell's getting guaranteed huge
six figures.
I know, man. It's like crazy.
Yeah, no justice in this world for sure.
No justice.
It's like there's like one little thing in the interaction between Nerisse and Burrell where you think like, oh, at least something good is going to come out of it. She doesn't give a shit about like the whole Daniels thing, but it's so like subtle the way they pull it off where you almost don't even see it or think about it, that she just like takes the case file so casually and she's like glancing over at it before she gets into the elevator. Like, it's one of those blink and you'll miss it moments, but it's gonna be consequential down the line when she plays hardball with Daniels. So it's upsetting on all ends. Daniels walks into the deputy ops's office with glee and is happy to be there without, you know, understanding all the machinations that are working behind him to undermine his authority.
Yeah. Burrell's into a different kind of glee, right?
The Glee Club.
This is not the Glee Club that Daniel signed up for.
Yeah. Another parallel with the transitions there, because, you know, Burrell is getting taken out by like the younger, newer generation. And although Proposition Joe doesn't know it yet, he's getting taken out by Marlo. So it's like another thing with those parallels, like there's history and tradition no matter like what walk of life you're from. And there's always going to be someone newer, younger, fresher, and better than you. Human life matters less and less. Have we said that before or talked about that?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. That's a great point.
But, yeah, so Daniels maybe was skimming some drug money. We've kind of talked about that a lot. Burrell is trying to play hardball and say that he'll do Daniels or throw him under the bus if, things get really ugly for him, but for now it looks like he's just going to leave quietly. But Carchetti is having to deal with all the political blowback of, you know, shit canning Burrell and making the ministers and the like deal with Rawls in the interim before Daniels gets groomed. So, but basically we see him in like a meeting with Norm and Evil Budget Prez, Mike Steintorf, O'Delegate Watkins, and Nerese Campbell, where he's going over like all the names of people he has to do favors for to appease them because of this whole shit show of a transitional period. And then it's then that Nerese drops the bombshell on him about the McCullough homes and the development deal, and he's only getting dirtier and dirtier the more he tries to clean up his own mess. Yeah, Irv gives a variation of the shit-eating speech to Rawls when they have their awkward little goodbye. It's almost like Rawls is trying to apologize to him or like have him be optimistic about things, but Burrell in his heart like knows the kind of relationship they've always had with each other, so he doesn't want to sugarcoat what the ugliness is that is coming from this whole period.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like we saw Carver, we saw kind of giving that, you know, Daniel speech, and now it's like cycling through at a higher level. People giving old speeches.
Right.
Recycling these speeches and whatnot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, but Burrell, if he really was stone stupid back in high school and in his salad days and was always pursuing schizophrenic policies where, like, you know, the zeitgeist was dictating him to do one thing or the other, even if they were contradictory, then how was he so like feared and like respected at the same time when so many people knew that he was just kind of an idiot and was like doing things based on like whatever, wherever the wind blew him to? Is that like a testament to his capability to survive? Was that he is a chameleon? Like,
I guess so.
I don't know.
Sounds like a good analysis.
Just seems unfortunate that he was able to climb the ranks So viciously. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you want to talk a little bit about Oscar Requer? Not the real Oscar Requer. Roscoe Norman from Sesame Street, making his appearance as Lester's old partner to help them out finding homeless dead bodies.
Yeah. So who's he on? I mean, I know Sesame Street's like a contentious topic these days.
Man, Big Bird can't tell me what to do with my body.
Yeah. How is he? How's Roscoe Norman, right?
Yeah.
How is he tied into the communist plot to brainwash our children?
I mean, he was going outside of the chain of command when he was challenging Rawls's authority back in the day, man.
Oh,
he's got to show respect. Rawls wasn't his comrade.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Rawls ruined his career.
So Rawls ruining his career just sent the message to Lester that he was always going to be down to stick it to the man and like go outside of the box to help homicide detectives, no matter how nefarious.
Yeah, maybe. And like, do you think this kind of inspired Lester too, or were they just always meant to be like partners?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he's like, I'm going to get screwed regardless, so I might as well.
Right.
Go after these people or whatever.
Yeah. I'm going to get sent to pawn shop. You're going to get sent to patrol. It's the whole system's fault. Let's fake serial killers.
Yeah. So, but that's the real bunk, right? Rick Ricquare. I kind of talked about him a long time ago.
That's the name of the real bunk, but that's not, it's a guy playing a variation
on
the real bunk. I mean,
well, why use his like real names? So confusing.
Again, with these name games they got us playing here.
It's just like, you know.
It's invigorating and enraging at the same time.
So if that guy was so like well-respected that they, you know, created one of the more iconic characters, like kind of in, you know, like paying homage, you know, what do you think he was like? Did he upset David Simon or someone on set if he was there like hanging out, or he's like, we're gonna make you this kind of like bumming it around patrol cop who just takes naps and burned out shells of old factories in South Baltimore.
Damn. I didn't even think about it from that angle. That's pretty brutal.
Yeah, but I mean, he's like, you know, he seems pretty like whatever, just chill-ish for a cop in this situation. Like he's the old school, like just leave me alone. I'm just trying to sell houses on the side too.
Oh yeah, he was trying to do that. Yeah.
So just like
buyer's market out there.
Yeah, because like, I don't want to get into it, but yeah. I mean, you know, cops doing their moonlighting.
McNulty and Freeman kind of have a difference of opinion on what they could do to like work this whole farce. McNulty's like, hey, nobody's even caring. Like Landsman's not even paying attention. But Freeman insists that they work it like a real case and they're the homeless encampment where they're trying to interview people. Kind of a sad state of affairs. Like there's one guy that like has a job but still can't afford a home. Johnny 50 is there.
It's a buyer's market. He should have told him.
Johnny 50 is there. Sad to see him in that situation. I guess the last time we saw him, he was like blacked out drunk outside of a bar.
Yeah. See, you're right, man. Alcoholism is the true, like that will lead to squalor just as fast as heroin.
I don't know.
Come on, Savage Willie takes. I miss them.
Yeah.
But Johnny, he's a drunk. I mean, is he though? Like, you know, what else are you going to do? You live under an overpass in South Baltimore or something.
Right. You're dealing with a guy who obsessively collects business cards.
Yeah. What's up? I forget so many characters. Like, before I make a stupid joke or like try to create a conspiracy, like what is the significance? Like I feel like are the cards gonna play a role?
I can't remember if this is the guy that does the copycat murders after the victims start popping up.
Oh, okay.
But It's also like, I don't know, like, any like real symbolism or significance behind that, other than in the immediate sense that this is just like signifying that McNulty's like way in over his head and he can't even like get a straight conversation out of this guy who just has probably a mentally illness driven temper tantrums that no simple interrogation will get to the bottom of.
So. Yeah. Good stuff. But they find a guy to go and mess with. So
yeah,
it's pretty just weird. Yeah. Like, nails and I don't like that stuff.
Yeah, and it's like the thing where they're like, they put him down at an angle so they could rush the blood to his head so he could bruise easier. Yeah.
And then like, yeah, the wire, like the nail trimmer things. I don't know. I always get like weird about like fingernails, like on chalkboard thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're totally normal for that stuff because that shit drives me insane too.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like that stuff. Like doesn't faze me.
It does for sure. It's like harder to watch than somebody like getting their head cut off on Game of Thrones or something like that is more aggravating.
Yeah.
But I like how like McNulty's like, oh, let's cover up the evidence that this was a drug overdose. And he just like casually tosses the needle and spoon to like the side of the...
Yeah, like 2 feet away. Well, you know, it's Baltimore, right? Yeah. Like any American city, it's like,
I mean, is he so like buzzed out on the alcoholism that like he can't even like get his depth perception correct that he doesn't know that that's going to be something hard to find? No.
Or he knows, like, you see that, like, there's so many vials or like so much heroin's been done consuming or being used. Yeah, it's just like an everyday thing.
Yeah.
So kind of like just a little seasoning on the situation, like builds authenticity rather than hurting the case.
Could be just incidental that it's there and whatnot.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of the main stuff. Well, Beatty calls out Jimmy finally.
Yeah.
Because like, I guess they have to introduce her back in because the audience would just. Like, even though some of this is really unbelievable or, like, unrealistic to people who maybe gotten used to, you know, like, the cadence of the show and all the,
right,
like, examples they use or, you know, how authentic it feels. They're like, wait, this guy's seriously this crazy? And, like, where's his living? Like, he lives with his girlfriend now, so
yeah.
Where's she? You know, it's like, oh, we got to have her say something. But it's still like pretty, like, is she that, is she that in the dark? Like, she's still working, I assume, and has her own, like, has kids. So she's just kind of like, you know, if you don't want to be here, not like, just, okay, go.
Yeah. Kicking him out. She definitely knows about his philandering at this point,
but she doesn't know like how. No one knows really except Lester, and Bunk, but you know, it's like, damn.
But I think she's probably just very vulnerable at this moment, considering she had like kind of a shitty ex-husband in the past that left her and her kids high and dry.
Yeah.
And it seemed like for such a long time that McNulty was like a stable force in her life that was doing good by her kids and whatnot, that she's maybe somehow rather naively clings to the idea that she could pull Jimmy back into the fold and get him straight laced again. But yeah, he's far gone from any sense of like familial stability at this point. Pretty ugly.
Yeah. And on the other hand, his old like partner, colleague Kima's like more inspired to be involved in, I guess, like her, like what could have been her son's life, but now is she's like
just an auntie,
auntie. Yeah. So, you know, like different perspectives there on the whole, like, policing doesn't just destroy a lot of like communities and that stuff, but like their own families.
No. Yeah. Well, could lead to damaged psyches and suicidal tendencies and whatnot if the mental health issues aren't addressed with gusto, you know?
Yeah. Talking about Gus, though. No.
Let's talk about Gus, though.
Yeah. With gusto.
Let's talk about Gus with gusto. I mean, how could you not? Clark Johnson, such an incredible actor. He brings a lot of gusto to the role of Gus.
Yeah.
But I love that little moment in the press conference where Carchetti is talking about all of Burrell's accomplishments.
Yeah,
and he cuts through all the legalese bullshit that he's talking about and says things that he knows everybody is thinking Carchetti wants to say about his fractured relationship with Burrell over the years. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy, that Gus. Exact opposite of Scott Templeton.
Yeah, fake Trout Scott. It's like more...
I prefer to ride it dry. I'm just doing what they tell me to.
Yeah, he's like, this is why everyone hates him. He's just so greasy.
Yeah.
Fails at an interview up in Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically it, right?
Yeah.
Like, they kind of talk about how they like the editor he meets with or the interview, you know, right. Goes awry because he liked the reporting done by the Sun.
Yeah, about the ground rent.
Maybe, do you think that was something introduced in that great Columbia journalism article? Well, there's some there's some stories in there. I took a screenshot of like, you know, I don't know if this is a callback to those, but we'll look into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like, Baltimore sucks. Newstown bad. How dare you compliment them?
Yeah, he's being pretty childish, and he doesn't thank the, you know, nice lady who gives him a tour around the facility and even does invite him to go to the budget meeting to sit in on. But yeah, the way he discards that name tag with such disgust just says a lot about, you know, you could tell a lot about people by the way they leave a building or leave a room. And the way he kind of just sulked out of there was just like, I don't know. He's just very petty.
But yeah.
Tom McCarthy, great actor, and went to great pains to atone for his portrayal in this show. So you got to give it up to him.
Good job.
Yeah.
Tom.
Pretty much covered that. Do we have anything we want to say about Gus's little spat with Klebanow and how he's feeling like they can't get anything done with all these cutbacks and how we don't even have like a court city reporter or anything anymore.
Yeah. They put Bill Zorzi, right?
Yeah.
That's the real.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think about his pretty much biggest speaking role to date?
Like, I thought he was great. He's a great actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good, yeah.
I think it's so funny that Tom McCarthy talked about how he had like reality checks at some point during the filming of this, because he'd be like interacting quote unquote with the extras and be like, wow, like you're really smart for extra. You know, like a lot about like how, you know, news journalism works. And he's like, oh wait, no, you're a real newspaper man.
Yeah.
So
that'd be true. Got it. You know, they keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Do we want to move on to Prop Omar Jolo?
Yeah, sure.
Prop Joe Marlo?
There you go. Joe's doing flower things like with Bodhi and D'Angelo. I think it's like the same flower shop.
Yeah.
So, you know, he realizes, but she's gone and there's could be blowback, or he's trying to like do his prop Joe thing to make sure he's in the clear. But
yeah. In his own words, he's trying to be as subtle as Butchie was by keeping it quieter than a puppy walking on cotton.
There you go.
But little does he know, a lot of the seemingly minor mistakes he's made along the way have just set the wheels in motion for him to be overthrown. Man, Cheese is a really slimy character, don't you think?
Yeah, he's got to be up there, like, you know, just as bad as Scott, right?
Yeah, Valchek, Scott Templeton,
right?
Lex, Fruit, nah.
Yeah, I mean, Lex, what did Lex do again? Oh, he, like...
Well, he killed Fruit, which was very idiotic, but Fruit was just, like, so nasty to Cuddy that it just, like, it really vexed me.
That was messed up. He didn't have to like kill him. Like, we're not pro murder, you know, here. But I kind of caught me off guard. I was like, wait, what, Lex?
Yeah. But okay. So basically Cheese endangered his own uncle's life because he went behind his back and told Chris the location of Butchie because he knew they were looking for Omar and all his associates. Which starts off this whole wave of violence. And then from there, Marlo and Chris kind of entice Cheese into their inner circle by handing him Hungry Man on a silver platter for him to just like beat and torture to death. And it's not that hard of a job to convince him to go against his own uncle, even though Proposition Joe should have gotten rid of him a long time ago.
Yep, he always was, what do you say, a disappointment?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's saying it lightly. I mean, this guy is just, it's just dogfighter, just like doing all sorts of bad stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice that we get to see Method Man in this role where, like, typically in his rap career, he has a lot of, like, bravado and, you know, braggadocio, is that the term?
You got the vocab stuff, man.
Well, okay, he's got the bravado, but like this character is like very vulnerable and like insecure in a lot of ways and like temperamental.
Yeah.
Childish, you could even say. So, yeah, man, Proposition Joe shouldn't have been caught up in those, you know, calcified, archaic ideas about the institution of family and just killed his own kin or got rid of his nephew like Slim Charles was intimating he should have done. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's harsh, but it is like a different world than I live in. So I'm assuming there's a different set of rules of how they, you know, go about things and get things done.
Yeah. I'd say it's a bit different than the world you live in. And I could say the same. Yeah, so Omar's coming back, though.
Yeah, he's coming back. And he's, you know, one of the most beloved characters, but we don't like to see him hurt Slim Charles because he's also a guy that we've, you know, collectively...
Yeah, he's cool. He's
got liking towards, yeah.
I mean, he killed a kid, right?
Yeah.
He did kill a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
As you would say, asthmatic teen, you know? Just part of the, you know, multiple epidemics, gun violence, asthma.
Yeah, Slim Charles did kill a teenager, but he's always been like, talk about loyalty. He's from day one. He's always just been like,
yeah.
You know, I know who I got to show respect to. And it's pretty impressive that he's like one of the only ones that survives till the end, but always shows the people who he should be loyalty the respect that they deserve.
Yeah, so I think Omar...
Not cool of him to kill a kid, though.
Yeah, you know, we're not pro-murder and, like, you know, it's... I mean, they don't know how old... They're not checking IDs, like, it's a game, but... Yeah, I mean, Omar probably realizes that, or...
Yeah.
He's like been tailing him for a while too, right? So they're familiar. I mean, he knows that like out of them, cheese is the worst. So kind of, you know, maybe, you know, takes him for his word and lets him go. So.
Yeah. And I think he's like smart enough to know that Butchie is like so well respected and liked that, yeah, he probably takes Slim Charles at his word that Proposition Joe wouldn't want anything to happen to Butchie because he kept it quieter than a puppy walking on cotton.
Yeah, like, what's the over-under on him? Like, if he would have used that line, like, right off the bat, probably not even getting pistol whipped. Or is he getting shot?
Oh, damn.
What do you think? Like if Slim Charles just right off the bat, it's like, hey, man, is this about Butchie? You know, he kept it quieter than a puppy walking on cotton. That's what, you know. He'd be like, oh, shit, you're right. All right, have a nice day.
Yeah. I mean, Omar basically did do that in the way he only knows how to.
Yeah, he's just like, okay, yeah. I'm not that stage yet. But
right.
Yeah, so, you know, teaming up with Donnie, it's like, I remember the first couple times watching this, this is when you're like, oh, man, it's like the crescendo. Like, this is everything, like, yeah, you wanted about Omar wrapped into, like, one big,
right,
like, deluxe whatever.
This is the Wild Bunch. This is the Wild West. But, yeah, I mean, there is, like, I guess, like, a little bit of fan service in that moment with the, you know, getting the gang back together.
Mm-hmm.
To get like a big showdown going on, but it's all a red herring because of course Omar falls at the hands of a little child. So,
oh, yeah. I was like, wow, what happens next? Red herring. Oh, okay. Say that diverse skill set of old poo poo pouch canard.
Yeah, it's just a bold misdirect.
Like, look at this little, I mean, he gets his ass kicked. He's really chilled out. He's just now just like, you know, he's collecting dog poo, and then like pretty soon he's just like burning cats alive and like killing grown men.
Damn. Yeah.
It's like different relationship, you know?
Yeah.
It's no more fun and games.
But yeah, I totally missed this the first time around, or maybe even the second time around watching this show, the New Day Co-op. And Fat Face Rick is making, he's boasting about like all his dealings with his club. And this was like totally prefaced in the whole news article subplot involving him and Nerys Campbell.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah. I never, see, this is when I question why the hell we're doing this and blah, 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 blah. It's like, you're always like, come on, man. Like, we're almost there. We'll be 2/5 of the way finished after recording episode 4. I'm like, okay, man. I'm like, geez, I'm going to finish it. Willie thinks I'm going to, I was joking with him that I'll just be streaming Warriors games on my phone by episode 7. Yeah. Like, what? Oh, give me another drink. Okay. Oh, yeah, Steph. Woo. Nah, but yeah, brilliant stuff. Like this, you know, little details like that make this all worthwhile.
Oh, so, yeah, definitely.
And then Hungry Man just talking mad shit like, oh, yeah, man, Milton was using prisoners or something like to do his, like, you know, remodeling.
Gross housing empire.
Yeah, see, we need a crossover there, too. Like, you know how reality TV show, like, talk about a fucked up Property Brothers episode. This is like, you got Barlow, Hungry Man, you got Slumlord Milton. It was like, is this like the real guy? They always talk about Milton Tillman Jr. or whoever. Like, he's kind of like Kenny Bird Light, or they're like similar type guys we've talked about. And I'm like, man, I got to look into this guy a little more to find that, like, you know, bit of information. Unless that's just something you only would learn from the streets. Like, yeah, man, he's using the, like, he's like that guy from Shawshank Redemption, basically. Like the warden.
Oh, damn.
Slumlord.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie, so.
Yeah. I don't know. I've seen parts of it. Like, I've seen it.
Great. Great. But yeah, Marlo is not one for conversation. He can't even like stomach a small talk at the meeting. And Proposition Joe wants to socialize him a little bit, but
he should have gone to Bunny's class. Damn.
He was too, but he was not in that demographic.
He's like too quiet,
too old. Like,
Too old, too quiet. But even if like even if that class existed when he was in school, like when did Marlo leave school? Like he probably just walked out one day in fifth grade and just never went back.
Just killed, Miss Schmoke.
Yeah. He would have just like,
So. One of the like last kind things Proposition Joe does for Marlo to show him the ropes is hook him up with Levy, and Marlo just roasts the fuck out of her when he walks into the office.
Yeah, let's go. Like, very redeeming quality of Marlo here, though. I'm not gonna lie. Like, this guy's terrible. He's just like killing everyone. But that was good.
I mean, Herc has his own little moment of redemption in this episode too, and he admits that he probably should have gotten shit canned, and says he's gonna support Carver in whatever he does.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
This is just like this is a really a great episode to show everyone's kind of like softer, humorous side. Right before like Marlo has his like he goes behind his back to make some backdoor dealings with the Greeks.
To
get Proposition Joe killed.
Yeah, exactly. And then just like hypnotist Marlo. Like, imagine if we get like promoted somehow. Like, if Calm picks up our like, you know, we can do some advertising and then like add a little Marlo like special segment there on the app. Okay. Just like, relax, close your eyes. It won't hurt none. Oh, wait.
Okay, that's good. Breathe easy.
Yeah. You should get the Marlo. Meditation by Marlo.
Oh, man. That's wild.
Yeah. Super dark. But yeah, I mean, hey, like Prop Joe's grandfather then? He was the first black man to own a house in Johnson or Johnston Square. It's spelled both ways on the... the wiki is like, it's also called Johnson Square in many realtor circles. I'm like, this is geo beef here. Johnston or Johnson, make up your goddamn mind. He says something too, like it all means something or it all matters. Yeah. Like Carver saying that stuff. Like, what's up with that?
Yeah, it's like some more stuff about the old school trying to teach the new school about values, even though Carver and Herc are from the same school, but
they're a little wiser and older, Carver, but still dangerous, just like a cobra.
Carver graduated pretty much, like understanding of things, while Herc is still. Yeah,
it's like once in a while, if you get him enough like free beers, you know, he'll just be like, "Yeah, maybe you're right. I support you."
Yeah.
Okay, so now I said that, like, we're gonna keep drinking, right? Or like. Wait, what is that? What is that like grid that you retweeted today, or that was retweeted from our social? It's like does not understand crypto,
and that's the thing that's going on with all kinds of different various characters.
Oh, okay.
Movies, TV shows.
That was pretty funny.
It was. I liked it.
Wait, Herc was the doesn't know what it is, but still invest.
I could totally see him being like one of those.
Yeah. This is good.
Gary V. No.
Yeah. The youth
twin bros.
Youth pastor of capitalism. That's what they call him. Gary V. And then like Marlo's like definitely knows, but definitely won't. And then, right?
Yeah. I think that's what it was. Cause
he's like, no.
Yeah. Herc, if he wasn't working for a shady lawyer, I definitely think he'd be part of like a multi-level marketing pyramid scheme or
would be
a crypto bro. Yeah, exactly.
He'd do something crazy.
His Instagram would be off the hook. But you know, again, little redeeming moment there when he can laugh with Prop Joe at how stupid Burrell used to be back in the day and how he's part of the Glee Club. So All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening in. We're really appreciative of that. As always, you could donate to us at anchor.fm/thegodswillnotsaveyou/support.
And check us out. Like I was talking about, you know, retweeting some fun stuff on the Twitter, the social media, the Instagram, the Meta.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Gods Will Not Save You. Check it out.
Yeah, if you don't want to engage with us on our social media platforms and, you know, traverse the metaverse with us, reach out to us via email, thegodswillnotsaveyou@gmail.com.
Thank you. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. So we'll talk to you next time. Peace.
Great. Thanks, everybody.